is December 7th, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 137, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-at-large, afternoon editor, something like that, co-publisher or whatever. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at AWR. MacObserver.com.
You know what? It's worth showing up every week just for that.
Thank you, buddy. Hey, you know, if you for some reason find this interesting, you can follow us both on Twitter.
That's true. As if you can't get enough of us already, you can actually see some of the little things that happen inside our heads, too.
Yep. I'm at TMO Brian. That's TMOBRYAN.
And I'm Jay Gamet. That's JGAMET.
Yes, he is.
So just go to twitter.com/ and then put our names in.
Yep.
And there you go.
And you can follow us. As a matter of fact, Jeff is going to – see if I could say that a little bit faster. As a matter of fact, Jeff is going to have a tip for us for finding people on Twitter later in the show.
Yes, I am.
Yes, you are.
So this is like foreshadowing. So – yeah, that we're actually talking about the quick tip before it even runs on the site.
Yep, that way, before we even run it on the site. And Jeff and I have both been getting a lot of followers since we've been mentioning our Twitter accounts in the podcast. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. And related to the whole Twitter thing, so on December 9th, there is a Denver tweet up that's happening. I'm going to go to it. So if you're in the Denver area, show up. And yeah.
That sounds like a good thing to do. Show up.
Yeah, just show up and say hi.
Yeah, show up and say hi.
Well, you know, if you're going to show up, you might as well be social.
You should.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that very happy note, we got a busy week, so we should probably dig into it.
We should. Actually, you know what? Before we dig into it, I'm going to totally pimp myself out.
Oh, please do.
Okay. So if you're going to Macworld Expo on Monday, I am teaching a class. It's in the Mac Hands-On Labs. So if you want to learn about iTunes for audiophiles, how to get the best audio quality out of all of your music, and how to use iTunes effectively with what I'm certain is a stellar music library that you already have, come see my class.
Oh, that's very cool. Now, who can actually get into that?
You have to have a conference pass that includes the Monday morning sessions.
Got it.
Right. So if you have a standard expo floor pass, you won't be able to get in.
Ah.
Right.
Well, for if
this
you
is
though,
one of the extra classes.
This is actually one of the reasons why you want to get that extra bitchin' pass.
Right. So I believe a user's conference pass or higher will get you into the session.
Oh, that's very cool, man.
And so that's, yeah, so Monday afternoon.
Cool.
All right, so now let's hop into the news. Apple's Lawsuit Express is running full speed ahead, and yet another Mac cloner is stepping onto the tracks. The iPhone is one of the top-selling smartphones. Apple suggested Mac users install antivirus software and then changed its mind. There might be some problems with new MacBook displays, and Apple says over 300 million apps have been downloaded from its App Store.
SciStar is experiencing the wrath of Apple firsthand now that the Cupertino company has moved to add Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or DMCA, violations to its case against the unauthorized Mac clone maker. The move could lead to even bigger problems for SciStar, including the possibility of criminal charges. In an amendment filed in the case, Apple alleged that SciStar used special code to bypass the built-in copy protections designed to prevent Mac OS X from running on non-Apple hardware, and asserted that the company illegally circumvented Apple's technological copyright protection measures, setting up the argument for DMC violations, and of course the DMC specifically and expressly prohibits those kinds of circumventions. the amended complaint also states that Apple suspects there may be some deep pockets behind SciStar's legal maneuvers, and it hopes to find out who those companies might be during the case's discovery phase. This isn't the first major setback in SciStar's case with Apple. The company was dealt a devastating blow in November when its antitrust case against Apple was dismissed, opening the door for Apple to continue with its own trademark and copyright violations suit.
And behold the open iMac. Aww. It's the latest. It's the latest and greatest of the cheap, crappy, and ugly unauthorized Mac cloners. The company's not being content to merely make and sell unauthorized Mac clones in Argentina, which is a hotbed of Mac activity.
No doubt.
They decided to beat their predecessors in this game, meaning SciStar, by one-upping them with an Apple-registered trademark right in their name.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes. Now, the company surfaced on Friday after launching their site, openimac.com, with two computers, the Open iMac and the Open iMac Pro. Despite their copyright-violating names, though, neither computer is an all-in-one design. Both are merely homely PC towers that use the same sort of third-party firmware hacks used by, in the process of being sued by Apple, SciStar. No word yet on an Apple lawsuit or whether or not their trademarks, patents, and copyrights are strong enough in Argentina to allow for them to try a legal attempt to stop the company.
In court documents responding to a lawsuit, Apple has made the seemingly unusual claim that no reasonable person could construe the company's own claims in its own advertising as quote-unquote claims of fact. Heaven forbid. In other words, Apple's legal department is arguing that Apple's marketing department can't be relied on to tell the truth. The court... this one kills me, Jeff. This story just kills me. The court documents were filed by Apple in response to a lawsuit from 70-year-old William Gillis alleging that Apple's claims that the iPhone 3G was twice as fast for half the price in browsing the internet were false. From Apple's response to the suit, quote, and we're quoting Apple here, plaintiff's claims and those of the purported class are barred by the fact that the alleged deceptive statements were such that no reasonable person in plaintiff's position could have reasonably relied on or misunderstood Apple's statements as claims of fact. Unbelievable.
Okay.
Yeah, follow that one up, buddy boy.
You know, I've heard this several times, and I'm still laughing. Okay, I'm okay now. No, I'm not. Okay, now I'm okay. Apple's iPhone inched up to take third place in global smartphone sales during the third quarter of 2008, according to data from Gartner. The quarter also marked the first time iPhone sales outpaced Microsoft Windows Mobile sales in the U.S. and around the world. The combination iPod and smartphone managed to snag some 12.9% of the quarterly global market, even as overall smartphone sales showed their weakest year-over-year growth to date. The iPhone's push into additional markets also helped increase sales more than four times compared to the same quarter last year. And in the U.S., the iPhone was second only to RIM's BlackBerry with 25.4% of the market.
Apple recently updated an article in the company's knowledge base that advised Mac owners to use, quote, multiple antivirus utilities so that virus programmers have more than one application to circumvent, thus making the whole virus writing process more difficult, unquote. What made this news was that this advice runs directly contrary to Apple's marketing, where it promotes the Mac as being largely immune to the kinds of virus problems endured by Windows users. For instance, in the 2006 Get a Mac commercial titled Virus, John Hodgman's PC character notes that, quote, there are over 114,000 viruses for PCs. Justin Long responds with, quote, PCs, not Macs, unquote, with a clear point being that Mac users don't have to worry about viruses. And in the company's current Get a Mac website FAQ, Apple notes, quote, Mac OS X resists most viruses, so you can do anything without worrying about losing everything, unquote. That makes the Knowledge Base article advising Mac users to use multiple antivirus utilities a bit strange, to say the least, which is perhaps why Apple pulled the article 2 days after it first came to light, though the above-mentioned fact and the 2006 virus commercial are both still available. As noted earlier, of course, it's not reasonable to view Apple's ads as being quote-unquote claims of fact, so we weren't so unreasonable as to have ever misunderstood Apple's claims that the Mac was resistant to Windows Vri as being actual facts to begin with. Just saying.
You know, that's the joke that just keeps on giving.
Oh, yeah.
Some owners of the unibody or the late 2008 model MacBook Pro notebooks may have discovered an issue with the screen, as a number of users have reported that the display will suddenly begin blinking or flickering. One poster on the Apple discussions board described the situation as follows, quote, "My computer had a hard time digesting all of the new messages being added in mail. Everything slowed down temporarily and mail disappeared and was inaccessible. When it finally reappeared with the new emails, I noticed the intermittent blinks," unquote. Now, in the full article, which you can find in the show notes, we relayed some tips from Mac Fixit on how to address this very issue.
Apple announced on Friday via a print ad, oh, it's those dreaded ads, in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, that it has had more than 300 million downloads at the iPhone and iPod Touch App Store. In the same ad, the company also said that there are now more than 10,000 apps available for download. Both numbers represent a startling increase in only 6 weeks, as Apple announced on October 21st that it had seen 200 million downloads and had some 5,500 apps on the App Store. Ah, but that's where we have to pause a moment and ask ourselves if this is one of those advertising claims from Apple that we should take as being a quote-unquote claim of fact. We'll let you guys decide. And now that sound means it's time for the Context Machine, and this is where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And, you know, I want to jump right into this whole, you know, claims of facts and advertising and stuff.
I think that sounds great, especially considering how much entertainment I'm deriving from it.
Both of us, for sure. So the legal department basically is saying that no reasonable person can construe Apple's claims as being claims of fact. And that, to me, is not only a, you know, are you trying to stab us in the back, or I guess more of a, you know, cut your nose off to spite your face kind of argument, but it's also the most ridiculous argument ever. I mean, it's not only is it stupid in terms of, you know, shafting your own company, it's just a bad argument.
It is, especially when you take into account, like in the United States, there's all these rules about truth in advertising.
Yeah, which aren't
And clearly in the United Kingdom as well.
Where they're tougher, that's what I was going to say.
Right, right. And see, if we were doing a video podcast, people could see me sitting here shaking my head right now.
They'll just have to visualize it instead.
And as a courtesy to all of our listeners, we're not doing a video podcast.
No, we love you more than that. So you were saying something until I interrupted you.
Yes, I was. And then I started shaking my head too. So my point is I was completely taken aback when I saw this argument because it did not make sense to me. It felt very... It felt very Johnny Cochran to me. And or if you want to go totally hip, it felt like the Chewbacca defense.
What is the Chewbacca defense?
The Chewbacca defense is from an episode of South Park, and actually Johnny Cochran uses the Chewbacca defense to defend a record label that claims that they have the rights to a song that Chef wrote.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And the Chewbacca defense basically said, now, if it makes sense to you that Chewbacca would go live on a planet with Ewoks, then it makes sense to give Chef the rights to the song. But it doesn't make sense for Chewbacca to go live with the Ewoks. So you can't give Chef the rights to the song. And everyone went, okay, we can't give Chef the right to a song.
That's very funny. It's the kind of thing where it, you know, like the lawyers should have been like running their arguments through someone other than lawyers for someone to go, dude, are you freaking crazy? What, you really want to argue in court that our ads are lies? It's befuddling to me.
You know, okay, maybe this is part of a master plan, and I'm totally grasping at straws here, trying to find logic to make this argument work, and I'm coming up with things like in January Apple starts advertising the Mac as a fish. I mean, clearly I am grasping for straws here, but I can't find anything out of the absurd to justify using that argument. I mean, they're just
And this could just be. So let's go ahead. Let's take the devil's advocate position, and neither one of us are lawyers, which is not a devil's advocate. That's actually a claim of fact that you can accept as a claim of fact out there. And
right, because our attorneys and legal department are not saying that. I'll just stop there. I'm just going to dig a hole. Yeah.
I like where you almost went with that. But they could well be arguing that the tagline, twice as fast for half the price, they could just be arguing that tagline is, you know, shouldn't be taken as a fact. In other words, that they're just sort of being, it's a rhetorical flourish Obama referring to Biden. I mean, God, I'm not communicating any better than you are, buddy. But anyway, the point is I suppose that could be their angle. But even still, it's just a bad argument to make, because every time now, like in both of these other stories that we talked about where Apple has an ad saying something, it's the first thing that runs to my head. Well, am I not supposed to believe that one either? I don't know. It's just
right.
It's just stupid.
You know, and if they were, and by they, I mean Apple's attorneys, targeting the one statement, you know, twice as fast, half the price, then they should have been very clear saying, when you hear this very statement, this is how it should be taken, as opposed to creating a blanket statement. And not being an attorney, there's probably an attorney out there smacking their head right now going, no, Jeff, you're completely wrong.
No, Jeff, but, you're completely wrong.
See, there it is, right there. And I don't know, but maybe, yeah. Okay, so now what's coming to mind is less filling tastes great. All right, right. So would a reasonable person look at that beer tagline and say, okay, well, it's completely true?
Well,
and is that something that a reasonable person should be expected to accept as fact?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, because the claim less filling tastes great is entirely subjective.
It is, and I find it to be completely wrong, because wow, I was about to make this so not a family show.
Right, fair enough.
So to paraphrase what I was about to say, I prefer not to drink that brand of beer because it does not taste good to me.
Sure. But the notion that the new iPhone 3G is twice as fast at half the price as the previous iPhone, that is a very quantifiable thing. That's not some kind of nebulous subjective tagline. So again, right. It's just, I don't know. It's a bad defense to me. It's an illogical defense to me. And I think that it really should have repercussions for the company in terms of people trying to decide whether or not they can believe their ads.
You know, I have to wonder, before this legal argument was presented, mm-hmm. was Steve Jobs involved in any way? My assumption is that he's a little bit more forward thinking than that. And if no one else at the company would say, you know, maybe we shouldn't be saying that we're lying. But who knows? Maybe he even said, hey, why don't we say this? They'll buy it.
No, well, first of all, it's very doubtful that Steve was in any way involved with the case. But I get at the point that I think you're trying to make is, I think that if he had been, that defense would never have been included in the case. Because he would have said, what are you trying to do to
right.
me?
Right. And we would have lost all of these wonderful jokes.
Yeah, we would have. Oh, well, let's move on. Let's move on to SciStar and OpenIMac.
Okay, so one thing that we didn't discuss in the news section that I just have to bring up right now is that SciStar, either they are completely nuts or they have a serious set on them. And you can imply what that set is for yourself. They're actually still selling and marketing their Mac clones, and there's rumors that they're going to release a new model soon too. That is, as they say, ballsy.
Well, Apple was not able to get an injunction against them to make them stop.
Right.
So, you know, of course they're going to keep selling if they can, and they can get some other sucker to buy a machine that's probably going to be unsupported sooner rather than later. Why not, right?
Probably going to be unsupported. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's a big gamble. And if it works for them, then great. But if it doesn't work, it's going to be really bad for them, because now Apple will use this presumably to compound the penalties that SciStar could face.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. That's actually a very good point.
So it could cost them more to continue selling the computers than just to stop selling their Mac clones and continue on with all of their other computers that they sell, because they sell more than just Mac clones.
Right. They do. They sell Windows and Linux systems specifically.
Right. So, yeah. So they must have an attorney somewhere that thought that they'd be able to get away with the whole Mac clone thing.
Yeah, I think Apple hired them that attorney away. Oh, I'm kidding. Well, that was just too fat to resist. You know, I wonder though, when the company was first, like this whole concept about whether or not they have deep pockets. The point is that Apple basically named 10 John Does. In an amendment. They're basically trying to find out who's behind the company. Naming 10 John Does doesn't actually mean that they even think that one John Doe exists. This is the same kind of thing that we saw with Apple trying to get journalist sources referring to Mac rumors a couple years ago, where they named, I think, 24 or 22 John Does within the company. And really, they're just, you know, trying to find, you know, they're just casting a wide net.
They were fishing.
They were absolutely fishing. And I think, well, here's the deal. SciStar does not seem to be run by smart people.
You think?
The comments that they first made when this first hit the news, and you know, Apple was trying to sue them, and they're talking about Apple being a monopoly. I mean, that's just stupid. That's stupid. That's something that a 9-year-old might think makes sense.
Or maybe the attorney that Apple hired to help SciStar.
Maybe. I find it hard to believe that a company with deep pockets behind them would make such a stupid argument, because it's dumb. SciStar is very clearly violating in user agreements. I hate the DMCA. You know, it's very interesting. I kind of expect to see some Apple fanboys jumping all over, like, yeah, you're breaking the DMCA, and you know, whereas, you know, we've all been bitching about the DMCA since it was passed. I'm still against the DMCA, but that doesn't mean that SciStar isn't in violation of the DMCA. And they are. I think that Apple's counterclaim here, this amendment, is probably right on the mark. And again, that's just not the sign of a smart company. So I would be surprised if there are deep pockets behind this company. It's very possible, but I find it doubtful.
You know, it's possible, and if there's an attorney out there that can tell me if I'm off base on this, well, please do. But maybe it's possible that Apple doing this whole phishing thing for the deep pocket companies mm-hmm. is an attempt to uncover other information, and that they don't actually expect to ever find any deep pockets behind SiteStar, but that through the act of discovery that they will uncover other information that they're really looking for, and they are just trying not to tip their hand so early.
Yeah, you know, SiteStar could be set up in such a way that you know, it's very difficult to figure out who's behind them, not necessarily just because they have deep pockets, just but because they've set up this wall of front companies and whatnot. I mean, I don't know that this is the case one way or the other, but you know, that could be the reason why Apple is naming these John Does, is because they really want to be able to get to the actual owners of the company, whether or not they have deep pockets.
Sure, and I could see that. That would totally make sense.
You know, and on a related note, I kind of wonder if SiteStar is related to OpeniMac.
I hadn't thought of that before, but I mean, I could see that happening.
Because wasn't SiteStar's model originally called the OpenMac?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's already been established that these companies that are out to make their little clones mm-hmm. are not very creative. So maybe they couldn't come up with their own name, and they actually ripped off SiteStar.
Mm. Could be. Apple was able to stop SiteStar from using that, because that's just a copyright violation, flat out.
Right.
You can't call your computer the Open Mac. You can't call your computer the Open iMac, at least not in this country, not in the United States. I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about Argentina. I don't know if they've got a strong set of IP laws there in the first place. And if they do, does Apple have all the adequate protections that they might need to stop this? I mean, in other words, is it possible that the reason why this company has launched in Argentina is because they think that Apple's ability to stop them there will be small?
Now, that would be a smart move on their part if that is the case.
Although it seems like it would be smarter to go to Russia or China.
Right. And yeah, that would make sense. So it could simply be something as simple as the people that started the company just happen to live in Argentina.
It could be. And the thing that kind of points to that to me is the fact that Argentina has a lot of customs fees in place on importing technology that makes these things cost a boatload more than they cost here.
Okay, yeah. See, so that would support just it happens to be that's where these people live.
Some opportunists in Argentina and, you know, thinking that they can make a fast buck. So I don't know. It's interesting. I imagine that Apple's going to be able to squash all these folks. And there's a particular reason why I want them to be able to do so. And that particular reason is not that I'm a shareholder. I am a shareholder, a very small, tiny, insignificant shareholder, but a shareholder nonetheless. But that's not the reason. The reason is because I think that having the hardware and the software controlled by the same company gives me a better user experience. And I don't want every Tom, Dick, and Harry to be able to make these computers now in such a way that might threaten Apple's ability to operate in the way that they have been, making a profit, being able to offer me this computer that works so well while still turning a profit.
Sure, I can totally see that.
And if everybody can come along and try to make Mac clones, especially right now while the company is so hot, while Macs are on the uprise, you know, it could seriously undercut Apple's ability to compete in its own space from, you know, these people who haven't really done a damn thing to contribute to the R&D, et cetera.
You know, when Apple had authorized clones out there,
mm-hmm.
that totally ate away at Apple's own sales. And what I saw was exactly what you're describing. There was companies that were making products that just didn't give you that same Apple experience.
Well, yes and no. I took a little bit. I mean, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Of course, you weren't getting that Apple experience, even though the Apple experience of the 90s was not.
Okay. It's certainly not what it is today.
But it was still better than, you know, than any other experience out there. And the big thing I think that we learned from that, you know, when during the Clone Wars, you know, I was very much on the side of cloning. I was very much, and that was because everybody could make faster computers than Apple could.
Right.
They were all smaller. They were more nimble. You know, they didn't have to worry about being able to get the kind of quantities that Apple had to worry about getting, and getting processor quantities in particular were kind of a big deal back then. And, you know, I was really a hardcore cloning fan just because the cloners were making better computers than Apple. And I have no doubt that if Apple were forced to compete with smaller companies today, that smaller companies could probably make better computers than Apple today, which means that Apple loses its profits. And the conclusion that I had not understood at that time, what made me wrong back then, was that if Apple can't compete, Apple don't exist. And then I don't get any of it.
Right. And that would have been bad.
So I want Apple to exist, and I want for – I would like to see another company be able to compete with Microsoft and Apple that was also doing a proprietary system. That would be great for the marketplace.
That would. You know, the last real competitor that I remember, and when I say real competitor, I don't mean in volume. I just mean in product quality. Do you remember the Amiga?
Oh, yeah.
I mean that was a kick-ass machine.
Yeah, it was well ahead of its time.
Yes,
well ahead of its time. Speaking of, it's not all ahead of its time. It's right here in the nick of time. Let's look at our sponsor, Audible.
Oh, right, that's right. Because we do have a sponsor this week.
We do.
So, yeah, which is great. Audible is. Okay, so if you're not familiar with Audible, which hopefully you are by now, but if you're not, that's okay. Now you will be. Because we're all about helping. So, yeah, there you go. All right, so Audible is an online company that distributes audiobooks.
Right, so people basically reading the books for us to listen to instead of reading them.
Right, which is great if you want to use your iPod to, in essence, I'm doing air quotes, read a book. Mm-hmm. While you're out and about running errands or you're doing something where having the book in front of your face wouldn't be appropriate, but you still want it to experience the book.
Right.
Yeah. And so anyhow, they're our sponsor this week, and they are making a special offer to all of our listeners, which is that you can get a free audiobook download just by going to a special website that they've set up for us. And you have to sign up for a free account to be able to get your book. And that URL is audiblepodcast.com/appleweekly, and it will be in our show notes also, so you don't have to write it down real quick.
You can just go click on it.
Which is so much faster.
You know, when Apple first announced the partnership with Audible for the iTunes store, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was, right? 3 years ago?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. They gave the journalists at the media event a free download of, I think it was Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And it was one of the Harry
right.
Potter books for sure. It was whatever one had just come out on Audible at that time. And I love that. It was really cool. I'd like listen to it sometimes as I was going to sleep. I definitely would take it on a plane with me. And I don't know. I really enjoyed listening to that. I think Audible books or audiobooks are pretty cool.
They are. I like having audiobooks when I'm out doing things where, like if I have to stand in line somewhere, mm-hmm. I can listen to the book. Or if I feel like just relaxing, mm-hmm. like I can lay down on the couch, listen to an audiobook, have my eyes closed, still get the book, and yeah, it's just nice.
Yeah, I know a lot of people will listen to them in the car when they're commuting too, just like they'll listen to podcasts.
Yeah, just like that.
Go figure.
Except we don't actually have any audiobooks that we've recorded, so it wouldn't be the same. They'd be missing out on us.
Note to Audible, we're available.
We are available, and we'll work for reasonable rates.
Right, we'll even do a tag team book reading. Where we'll quip jokes and you know, kind of poke fun at stuff as we go. Just saying.
Just saying.
All right, let's get back to the context machine. There's one more thing I wanted to talk about, and that's the 300 million downloads.
Right. So does this fall into the grain of salt thing?
Yeah, should we believe this particular thing? Is this something we should take as a claim of fact?
Yeah, well, now I'm wondering.
It probably is, actually. What I thought was really interesting about this, Jeff, was just, I mean, 6 weeks for 100 million downloads.
That's crazy.
It is pretty crazy, man.
I mean, yeah, that is a lot of downloads.
Sure is. And they've added 4,500 apps in that same time. So, you know, that roughly that 6 week period.
You know, that's some serious traffic.
It is some serious traffic. You know, one thing though, that I don't really think anyone's kind of cottoned on to this and I haven't been able to figure it out for sure. In other words, to be able to get it confirmed, but I am pretty sure that the number of downloads includes updates.
You know, that would stand to reason. And I say that because when you get a download, or excuse me, an update to an application, mm-hmm. that update is not just a small package that updates the application on your iPhone or iPod Touch. It downloads the complete application again and then replaces what was already on your iPhone or iPod Touch.
Right. So, and that counts as a download pretty much.
Right. So it would not surprise me if you are absolutely spot on by saying that all of these downloads must be including updates as well.
Right. Which means that Apple hasn't seen, if it's true, Apple hasn't seen 300 million apps downloaded, but rather 300 million downloads. And it is still significant. It's still freaking amazing. I think that it warrants mentioning.
Well, sure. Yeah, even including a bunch of downloads that should be counted as updates, I mean, still, there is a lot of traffic going through that site. And I have a feeling that when Steve Jobs made his comments during the earnings conference call, where he said that this has gone beyond their expectations, I think he's actually being totally truthful on that. Mm-hmm. And he probably didn't even have to consult with his legal department to figure out if he was being truthful or not. He knows when he's telling the truth.
Very nice.
That joke is just going to keep coming up.
That one's very nice. I don't wonder. Folks, I'm sorry. What am I trying to say? Downloads, Steve Jobs, applications. Oh, do you remember that column? Try that again because I'm going to cut some of that out. Do you remember that that column I first wrote when the App Store was first announced about how, I thought that maybe Apple was discounting the iPhone so much because they thought they could make money off the App Store?
Right.
So first,
yes, I do remember that actually.
So first of all, part of my premise is wrong. The discounted iPhone price was because AT&T was subsidizing on the back end.
Right.
So I was just wrong there. But I did talk about the App Store becoming a huge platform that the iPhone and iPod Touch could basically be this huge platform for application development, and that with Apple taking 30% of the paid apps, that this could become a significant source of revenue for them.
And I think you were spot on that.
Definitely. And I think that we're seeing that happen now. You got to look at the fact that the iPhone is still pretty new, and 300 million downloads, even if 33% of those downloads are actually updates.
Right.
That's,
yeah, actually, you're right. The iPhone should be considered a new product still. I mean, we're on the second generation, but the overall product line still isn't even 2 years old yet.
Right. That's right. It's a year and a half old. It's not even quite a year and a half old.
Yeah. So, I mean, to have gone from where the iPhone started to where everything is today, mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge.
It is. It is. It's a big deal. It's a big deal, and it's going to keep getting bigger. And I'll just go on record as saying that I think that Apple's going to have a blowout quarter. Just saying.
I can't wait to see if you're right. Yeah. And I know I'll know right away because we'll be doing our live coverage just like we always do.
Yes, we will. Actually, plus we'll probably get a preview. Well, no, that's not true. We won't get a preview at Macworld, but it'll come. It usually comes during the Macworld week. So we'll see.
Right.
They haven't announced the dates yet for the conference call, but we'll find out.
Right. So, yeah. So tune in and we'll give you the scoop as it's happening.
Gotcha. All right. One thing before we do the quick tip, we got a note from Richard D. Buzz.
Yes, we did.
Let's cue Ricky's bass. We got a note from Richard Buzz after listening to our Mac and iPod gifts guide. Now, that was the podcast that we recorded right before this one. We recorded it last weekend and published it during the week. And in that that podcast, we had three products each that we were recommending as products that we thought would make great gifts.
Right.
Yeah, it was fun. We had a lot of fun with it, actually. It was a lot of fun. And I personally recommended three products: the AudioEngine A5s, the Vaha case, the leather case for iPhone and I guess iPod Touch, but whatever, and the Logitech MX Revolution mouse. And Mr. Buzz was pretty much like a little dismayed at my choice of the Vaha case that I was clearly hot and bothered about. Clearly. And
you think?
Yeah, you think. So he wrote and said, Brian, I'm amazed that you guys spoke about a $99 leather case that does nothing. And that's in all caps. I was just in the Apple store and for the same price purchased an in-case power slider case for iPhone 3G, which is so very cool. Check it out here. So two things. The power slider case is pretty cool. It's a case and a battery in one.
Which, that is cool.
That is cool. But I wasn't touting. I'm just to make the point here, the Vaha case, I like it because it looks good. It doesn't do anything besides protect your iPhone, but it looks good. And that was the point I was trying to make.
Yes, it does.
But
yeah, and it is a very good looking case.
It is a good looking case. But anyway, we do appreciate it.
I would dare say sexy.
It is sexy. It is very sexy. But we certainly appreciate the note, Mr. Buzz, and definitely appreciate the pointer to that case. It looks like it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. But you know what? I think the Vaha still looks it's a sexy
case. It's sexy. All right, hit us up with your quick tip.
Okay. All right, so this is actually a really easy quick tip. And here's the deal. If you're a Twitter user, and I'm sure that comes as a shock to all of our listeners that both you and I are Twitter users. Mm-hmm. If you're a Twitter user and you want to find new people to follow, but you don't really have any contact with them, so you can't say, hey, what's your Twitter name? How do you actually find these people? Well, the answer used to be you would go to Twitter's search feature and you would type in their name and see what comes up. Well, Twitter axed that feature out, which really kind of sucks.
It does.
So what do you do now? Yeah, it really does. So what do you do now? Well, the answer is you use Google.
Oh, that's so smart.
Yes, the magic of Google. So if you want to find someone on Twitter, go to the Google webpage or use the Google search in your web browser, whatever. Type in the person's name and then type Twitter after that, and then hit return. And what will happen is Google will go out and search for that person's name associated with Twitter, and odds are if the person you're looking for has a Twitter account, it's going to show up right at the top of the search results. And then you can just click on the link. It'll take you to their Twitter page. And if you're already signed in, you can just click the follow button, and you're done. That's it.
Okay, first of all, that's a brilliant tip.
Well, thanks.
Secondly, Google rocks.
Yes, it does.
And thirdly, I wonder if that's going to be affected strongly one way or another by how active they are at tweeting.
You know, it may be affected like that. Now, if you type in my name, so if you type in Jeff Gamm at Twitter, I'm the top of the list.
Sure.
All the time. But then again, I don't think there's many other Jeff Gamets out there, and I don't think they're tweeting.
All right, well, let's try John Braun.
That sounds good. And if you're not familiar with John Braun, he is one of the co-hosts from our other podcast, Mac Geek Gab.
Yes, and a longtime Mac Observer columnist. He writes, it's on and off again these days, but the Monday's Mac Gadget, which has always been one of my favorite columns.
Actually, I will differ with you on that. He is very regular with that now. Every other Monday.
Did you get him? We now have it.
Oh, yes.
Good for you.
And it was easy. Well, you know, with my smile, how could he resist?
That's true. Now, I saw
so,
him.
Yes, every other Monday, John does his Mac gadget.
Well, I guess
it's
he
great.
Does now. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, my apologies. I'm glad that we're doing that regularly again because it is and always has been one of my favorite columns that we do. I am seeing John at the top. I'm seeing Dave Hamilton at the top. Dave Hamilton is our president and the co-host of the Matt Gee Gab with John. What's another normal name that we can tap?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of people that I know that. Oh, okay. Let's actually use someone that I know doesn't tweet on a regular basis.
Oh, good.
So, type in Jay Nelson.
Jay Nelson. Good thinking.
Yeah. Jay Nelson, editor and publisher of Design Tools Monthly.
Yep. The top. Well, top result, Tim. Yep. See.
Okay.
There you go.
So that's pretty good.
That's a great way of doing it. And since Twitter, for some bizarre reason, that you actually had a theory on that.
My theory is that they can't keep up with the server load, and so they've been shaving off features as the user base grows, and that way they're able to keep us from seeing so many fail whales.
Well, that makes sense.
That's my theory.
That makes sense.
And if I'm wrong, and someone from Twitter wants to talk to me about that and let me know what the real scoop is, please do, because I would love to know what's up with that. And if I'm wrong, I will be more than happy to let everyone know.
Cool. Well, another great tip.
Cool, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, so now comes the part where I get to say that fun little tagline again.
Uh-huh.
All right. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And since we're on the Twitter thing right now, feel free to follow me on Twitter. That address, again, is twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow my account at TM O'Brien. That's TM O'Brien. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.